Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our next session. We have Gevo, Inc., ticker GEVO, and today we have Dr. Pat Gruber, CEO. I'd also encourage you to take a look at the website at Water Tower Research, www.watertowerresearch.com. We have a bunch of research and available content on Gevo to get you up to speed, but very excited to have the next presenter. So, Pat, I'm going to hand it over to you and give a brief overview of the company and background, and then we've got some slides to run through, and then we'll open it up for some Q&A.
Sounds good, Sean. Thanks a lot. Great to be here talking with you all today. So Gevo Incorporated, we are focused on this broad category of renewable resource-based fuels and chemicals. The thing that's interesting about what we're doing, they're about delivering cost-competitive fuels and chemicals that also happen to abate carbon along the way, and we think carbon is a co-product. And I'll explain more of what we're talking about, but think of this: cost-competitive jet fuel made from renewable resources competes with petrochemical in the marketplace. That's what we're about. That's what we're trying to do. We're focused initially here on jet fuel because there's going to be a jet fuel shortage in the future, and we'll talk through this and explain it. We're at an interesting time in our company, and I've recently turned to be EBITDA positive, and we have a nice platform for growth. Obviously, in the forward-looking statement, this means, listen, don't believe anything I say. Don't buy stock on anything I say. One of the things that's unusual about our team is that we have a heck of a lot of directly relevant experience. What I mean is we've actually built plants, commercialized new technologies, developed new marketplaces in this renewable resource-based chemicals, plastics, and fuel space. We're unusually strong. And what this does, though, is it makes us extremely jaded about what works and what doesn't. We do not like newness. We already live in the world of newness and having to teach people about carbon, teach people about, yes, it's the same jet fuel. It's the same jet fuel, people. And so, no, how do you do that? How do you make it practical? How do you leverage, you know, this? When you think about the scale of what we're trying to talk about here, it's ginormous. It's big. You can't be screwing around with little stuff. But you got to do things that work. Well, I have a team that's really, really good at this, and it does impact how we talk about things and how we think about things. So I'm one of the grumpier old people in the space. When you're looking at our business, you're going to see us talk about Gevo Fuels, RNG, Verity, and Gevo Chem. Let me break it down for you, though. Gevo Fuels is our bucket where we have 67 million gallons of low-carbon ethanol. It's one of the lowest CI score ethanol plants in the country. At that site, we also have one of the very, very few operating carbon capture sites where we literally are sequestering carbon, capturing off the fermentation and putting it down a hole. I'll explain a little bit more about that in a minute. We have a well there with 1 million tons of capacity. We're the only people on our well. It's an outstanding site. We also plan to develop our alcohol-to-jet business there, build it at Gevo, North Dakota, and it's a great site. It'll simplify things. We'll integrate it straight to our ethanol plant. We have a business that you might have seen about RNG. RNG for us was done as an opportunity to generate a low-carbon methane source to displace fossil-based natural gas should we need to use it to lower our CI score. Reality is we figured out how to be so efficient in how we produce things that we don't have to do that. So right now we use our RNG and just sell it to California. So for us, it's a business that has optionality for the future. We just run it, try to make money on it, which we do. Verity is a business about counting carbon and sustainability attributes and then monetizing in the marketplace. So think of the problem. You got thousands of farmers' fields, and you got all that corn that from there has to go onto trucks, got to keep track of that. It goes into an elevator of some type, either to plant or in a grain elevator itself, then gets shipped to a plant and gets processed where energy is applied to convert it into something else. How do you keep track of all that stuff? Well, we're doing it end-to-end, and it's making good progress. It uses DLT technology, which is the underlying technology from blockchain. This is really important because you got people, if they're going to pay for carbon, they got to know they got something. They have to know that they got something. That means understanding what happened at the field and understanding the energy that was used during production and all the rest through the whole value chain. And this is what's different about it, is through the whole value chain. So it's an interesting business. It's in development. It's a software service business, and we've been already using it with We recognize that other companies like us would benefit for already, so we're already working with them. Gevo Chem is a bucket for us where that it's a it'll be a follow-on business. And really what happens is that when we're converting ethanol into jet fuel, the first step is to make olefins, light olefins. And if anybody is familiar with a cracker, that's what comes out of crackers. The stuff that comes out of crackers are called light olefins. From olefins, pretty much all chemicals are made and plastics are made. And you can make fuels too. Our technology works the same way. Ethanol goes in to the ATJ process, the alcohol-to-jet process. We make these light olefins, and then we convert them to jet fuel. Or we can make diesel fuel. Or we could take those olefins and send them over and make plastic out of them if we wanted to. Or we could send them over to a chemical plant and make other chemicals out of it. You get that kind of for free if you do this business system. The common thread is renewable carbon. It's scalable, cost-competitive with petro products. And we also have a system that solves the CO2 emissions across the life cycle for those that care. The Gevo footprint is growing. I'm not going to spend time on this. We have operating facilities. We are commercial operators of stuff. We aren't a research lab, experimental stuff. We don't care about that. We care about stuff that works at large scale, and that's where our focus is. And in fact, we recently acquired Gevo North Dakota. This plant was built. It was a co-op built this plant, 67 million gallons per year. It's a very efficient ethanol plant up in Richardson, North Dakota. It has a well with a million tons per year of CO2 capacity. We are one of the first to do this, the first one with CCUS. It's been operating since 2022. It works well. We're currently using only 16% of this well, or 165,000 tons. It's got 500 acres up there. It's a great business environment, great infrastructure. We're going to be focusing at this site to build out our business system. At this well, as I mentioned, it's a million tons per year of CO2 sequestration capacity. It's 1.3 miles down. We capture the bubbles off of the fermentation. Anyone who knows who drinks beer or champagne knows that when you brew to make ethanol, the little bubbles are CO2. What we're doing is capturing that CO2 and then concentrating it, making it liquid, and pushing it down a hole. It eventually turns into rock. What's interesting about our site is it's a terrific site. It's got this huge capstone rock formation that is very simple compared to a lot of places. We're the only penetrations in our region. In other words, we have a primary well and a monitoring well, so we don't have to deal with monitoring everybody else's holes or former wells or whatever else is going on. And that's an advantage when it comes to the work of this. You'd be shocked at how much effort it actually takes to keep track of everything here. But it works. We've got a track record of it over years. It's a fascinating place, and so obviously we're going to want to figure out how we can use more and more of that space. What's interesting is that you get a tax credit of either you can take a 45Q, which is in the One Big Beautiful Bill, or a 45Z. You can't do both at the same time, but you can one or the other. 45Z is a production tax credit around producing fuels where you have a low CI score, but part of that comes from carbon capture. Or you could just take a credit. It's at a lower value, but you could just take it for putting carbon dioxide down a hole as CO2. One of the things that we have to address this, because people who aren't familiar with us, they're right away, "Oh, corn, oh my God." Well, look, we don't use that kind of corn. So we have to put our friend Corny up here to remind people it's not in a can, or it's not popcorn, it's not in a cornflake, it's none of those things. In fact, 99% of the corn is field corn. It's not the kind that humans eat. You couldn't even eat it if you wanted to. You have to go process the living heck out of it to make it into something else. People don't do that. And corn supply is continuing to increase, even though land use with it is continuing to decrease. Now, this is right in the face of what enviro groups say. It blows their arguments away. Facts are land use has decreased. Corn production has increased. It's going to continue to increase because technologies such as precision agriculture, strip-till, no-till, those enrich the soil and help build up soil fertility and moisture-holding capacity. And so it reduces, makes the need for nitrogen go down. There's all kinds of great benefits that are occurring. It's from equipment changes. It's from seed changes. It's from all kinds of stuff that's going on in the industry to make it better. It's an outstanding resource. And what's fascinating about it is you get multiple products from it. And this is something that's really important to understand because you got to think about the co-products that come from corn. There's really several things that come from, say, a ton of corn. You can get one-third of that weight would go to make ethanol. That's the carbohydrate portion, the starch. Remember, photosynthesis. It's CO2 plus water with the energy of the sun goes and makes a carbohydrate. That's what the starch is, a carbohydrate. It's got carbon, hydrogen, electrons. That's what gets converted into ethanol. And when we're making our jet fuel from ethanol, it's capturing all that carbon with its electrons all the way to the jet fuel. And that's why it has so much energy. That energy of jet fuel literally comes from the sun. That's what's fascinating about it. That's also true of ethanol. When we also have, we produce in a kernel of corn or a ton of corn, one-third of the weight goes to high-protein animal feed. Obviously, you want to maximize the value of that animal feed, and that's a co-product, a co-product credit. Now we're entering into a world where people care about carbon dioxide. It turns into a valuable product, a co-product. And so if we capture value from that, that is one more large revenue stream for us. That's, in essence, what we're about as a business. We have this view of the world that, you know what, people want to see carbon abated, great, put your money where your mouth is, step up and pay for it. We'll put it down a hole for you. Or if you want it for another purpose, we'll sell it to you for that too. But you pay us for it. We'll abate carbon for you. And we have the ability to do that because we're dealing with concentrated forms of carbon and we're using a business system which reduces the overall footprint in the first place. We do capture 100% of the nutritional value of corn. That's important. Now, whenever analysts are looking at our business, they get it wrong. The reason is they're not looking at really what's happening here. We're taking in corn, we're milling it, we're using the carbohydrate, we're fermenting it to make ethanol. Out of this system comes the feed and protein, the corn oil, which, by the way, grows up in value as more and more demand for renewable diesel and HEFA jet fuel come into play. Cool, we'll sell it to those guys. We get to sell biogenic carbon as carbon removal and abatement credits. This is literally people paying us to abate carbon, remove carbon. We've done deals like this with NASDAQ and BioRecro. BioRecro should be noted because it's a multi-year deal going out into the future where they'll pay us, and it was a significant amount of money. We're going to see more and more of these kinds of deals, and that's what we love to see because that's what we think should be done. People care about carbon. Good, pay for it. You're willing to pay for a branded product, and your people will pay for, like, you could carry your stuff around in a paper bag, or you can carry a fancy purse or backpack, some branded product in the extreme. Maybe you got a Louis Vuitton purse. You can carry your stuff around in a paper bag, but you choose a Louis Vuitton. Why? Because you want it. It's cool. You believe in it for whatever reason. Cool. So this concept is not new. Getting people to do it with something that's real, that's the trick, showing them that they got something that's real, credible, auditable, legit. The world's been short on those kind of things. Well, that's what we're bringing to the world. We also collect RINs from the RFS. We can get this 45Z tax credit, which has nothing to do with selling carbon or carbon removal. And then you have certain state-level incentives and credits. All those things are co-product values. And in fact, it's really important to note that our 45Z tax credit shows up literally as a co-product, not as revenue, and it's a sizable number. Ethanol will serve in the future as our raw material to make jet fuel. And you know what? When we make jet fuel, we generate more co-product value. That's the business system. It's actually kind of complicated, but that's what we're teed up to do. It's what my team has done throughout its life. Our professional careers is stuff like this. One of the interesting things is that we can monetize CO2 in multiple ways. When we're talking about selling the tons of carbon credits, there's two markets that we focus on. There's low-carbon fuel markets in California, Oregon, Washington, Canada, and it's other states that's developing. We can get between $50 and $200 a ton. In this case, we'd be selling the carbon in tons along with the gallons of ethanol or later jet fuel that go with it. We could do that. Or we can take the jet fuel, or sorry, the ethanol, and sell the ethanol to a market like in Chicago or some other place that doesn't really care about the carbon, and we can sell the carbon to somebody else. This is a really important concept. It matters for jet fuel because if the person who cares about carbon in the whole value chain isn't necessarily the direct buyer. And in fact, we get paid more if we do this, generally. And so how we think about it is we're trying to maximize the dollars per ton that we get for that carbon, irrespective of the market it goes to. We're trying to optimize it and play this game and be wise about it. That's what you'll see us do. We have 165,000 tons of carbon to monetize. Where best can we get paid the most? And certainly isn't in California at $50 a ton. We don't want that market. Great. Let these other guys go get it. We'll go get these other ones where it takes a higher standard in more detail to prove that you have something. And that's a subtlety that's in this system. People will talk glibly about this. You got to actually prove your information. Ergo, that's why we have verity in our business and why it's so important for us. One of the things that's interesting about our business is that we are growing in EBITDA. We've gone from minus 60 EBITDA last year. We're probably around plus 20 this year or so. And if you look forward, you can see how we're going to get to, with just optimizing our business, we can get to a $40 million of adjusted EBITDA. And the way you should look at these charts is the production tax. So first of all, looking at the group of charts on the left here, $64 million of the production tax credit related to 45Z. There's $13 million of selling the stuff on a voluntary basis or into the low carbon fuel markets as tons of carbon value. Then you have the ethanol and the protein values. Then you got RNG. Great. And right next to it is our cost, the projects, and then our burn, basically, to keep our business going. So you net out at about 40. You know what, though? What's interesting is that this site we have in North Dakota, and this is all before we deploy an ATJ plant, we can see how to grow this. We can definitely see we're going to get more from the 45Z production tax credits. And this one that I care most about is developing this marketplace for the voluntary carbon abatement or maximizing how we sell carbon into those low carbon fuel markets and the values that we get for it. Because remember, we have carbon capture directly underneath us. It's underneath our plant. There is no pipeline. It's right here, and it's a clean system. It's very simple, and it is going to provide for the gold standard. In fact, it got certified that already by a company called Puro Earth, who cares about these things, and with a 1,000-year well. Outstanding. Good. Let's go monetize it. And I can tell you, in the market development of this, we're finding that we're dealing with a lot of newness. People haven't seen high-quality carbon credits before that are bulletproofed. We have them, though. We see that ethanol will grow a little bit, and we can get more out of RNG. Now, this also, what you're seeing on the right hand here, where the numbers grow, that's also from incremental expansion of our plant up there in North Dakota, moving it up a little bit in capacity, basically debottlenecking it with incremental capital. But that's interesting because we can see ourselves getting to $110 million in net EBITDA out of that site, all before we do jet fuel. Now, think about this. We're not a normal developer. We are a bunch of technology. Got 300 patents around hydrocarbons and alcohols and all that kind of stuff. We got plant designs that we spent hundreds of millions of dollars on. We got lots and lots of technology know-how, thought it all through. Now we got to go deploy jet fuel. So we're not an ethanol company. We're focused on this. Great. Let's go optimize what we're doing up here in North Dakota, capture more carbon, figure out how to use that well better, get more stuff down the hole, get paid for it, and then add ATJ up at that site and get going. And if we do that, we grow. We're strongly capitalized. We got quite a lot of cash. Some of it is still restricted. We'll unrestrict that in the future. I won't spend time on this. Let's talk about jet fuel. I don't like this slide. I got to change it. Why we like SAF? I don't like the word SAF. I like jet fuel. We're doing it. And I like alcohol to jet. SAF is kind of this misnomer of stuff. It's not even a real market. The market's for jet fuel. Let me explain. Jet fuel demand's increasing in the U.S. It's going to be in a short situation out to the future. In fact, it's 2.3 billion gallons by 2035. And gasoline demand is decreasing. We're not going to see new refineries put up to make jet fuel. Heck, in a barrel of oil, it's only 9% jet fuel anyway. So you don't build a refinery just to make jet fuel. And it isn't that easy to rearrange the molecules in a barrel of oil to make more jet fuel. And refining capacity is decreasing here in the States. So this says that the production capacities will decrease here in the States, and jet fuel demand is increasing. 2.3 billion gallons of shortfall. How do you fulfill that? It would probably have to be imported. That matters. That's important to understand. And here's the thing that we do. In this chart, it's a chart of jet fuel price against WTI crude oil price, and the little blue dots are just a scatter plot of what happens. And you see where that green box is, which is Gevo Integrated, ATJ, and SAF. That's where we play. That's where we play. We're in the hunt here in that $60 to $100 a barrel game. We're there. We can compete on a cash cost of production basis. Now, remember, the petrochemical industry, their fossil-based jet plants, the fossil refineries are paid off. If you go compare apples to apples, guess what? We compare favorably in the cost of goods sold, the production, the cash cost of production. We have to deploy new capital and pay that back. So that's where I think the carbon values and core product values come into play especially. You'll notice that HEFA is up and to the right. HEFA is the vegetable oil route or the used cooking oil route. It's always going to be more expensive than us on a production cost basis, always, because that's just the chemistry that's involved of the raw materials. And then power liquids is off the chart. I had to put it on here, but it's way off the chart. This is actually being generous as to what it is. And that's just math. Anybody who wants to do math, I can show them how to. Anybody who wants to learn about this, we'll gladly show them. It's friggin' math. And it comes back to how you capture energy and use energy during the production and manage your yields. One of the things that we've done in our technologies, we're using fully commercialized technology unit operations. People want to talk about alcohol jet. Ooh, it's new and magical. No, it's not. The technologies have been done in the petrochemical industry for years, decades. We're putting those unit operations together in a new way that reduces energy. Pretty simple, actually. We do this, we do this up at Gevo North Dakota. That would give an uplift of another $150 million a year. Well, that's pretty cool. I like that. And that's pretty exciting. And that's based upon the contracts that we have in place, where we're selling jet fuel to an airline, detaching the carbon and selling the carbon to someone in the value chain who cares. That's the kind of deals we've done in our past publications or our filings on PR. This is a map that shows the 180 ethanol plant operations in the U.S. Remember, it's a 2.3 billion gallon shortfall by 2035. That would require 70 plus alcohol to jet facilities. Now, that's kind of interesting. So it's like a target-rich environment. You could use our plants pretty much adjacent to any plant in the U.S. Obviously, you're gonna optimize it for economics. But for each site, generally, you'd find about $100 million of direct EBITDA for the ETJ plant, $70 million of regional impact in and around the plant, right? That's what the community would benefit from, about 400 to 600 jobs, direct and indirect. And it uses more corn. It improves energy security. It doesn't concentrate jet fuel on the coast. It fills the shortfall of jet fuel by being able to produce it all around the country. That plays politically. This is why people care about what we're doing in the administration. And in fact, this is on day one executive orders. President Trump noted biofuels, ethanol, aviation fuel. These guys are aware of what we're doing. And the game for us then is we've taken all this stuff that you have to put together. And yeah, it's a little bit complicated, but by God, we've been working on this alcohol to jet stuff since 2007. And now we're at a place where we can go commercialize it. There's enough value in the marketplace where thank God that there's people who want to pay for carbon. And we have some of these tax credits that could help draw attention and get things started. But, you know, the tax credits, production tax credits, ultimately need to go away. You got to compete head-to-head with Petrojet once things are paid for. That's the game afoot. So you got all these pieces. That's what those little puzzle pieces are showing. We're creating the playbook. We're going to focus on Gevo North Dakota, get the first plant built, ATJ-30. And then we're going to do the cut and paste, copy, edit, paste. You can do multiples of these things. And that's the game plan of what we're doing. We're not exceptionally brilliant. We have this great asset up there in North Dakota. So what should we do? We grow the EBITDA of North Dakota, get more money, make it stronger and stronger, use it as a foundation up there, debottleneck the capacity, reduce the CI further, get more money, develop the carbon market for a million ton per year well, and put more stuff down the hole. We should do that. Makes a lot of sense. Completely under control. And it's inexpensive to do. Next step, deploy the first large-scale ATJ plant. That adds further EBITDA to even North Dakota, and get that whole business system set up and how to finance it. And I think the financing is going to be the key, a major, a very important to show that can be done. Because now, look, people will have done it. We What's interesting is I'm not sure. I think, well, we've gotten a notification from the Department of Energy that they're willing to shift their DOE loan guarantee from South Dakota to North Dakota. That's kind of exciting. So we're going to have to figure all this out, and maybe it won't take equity, or maybe we'll have to have some equity. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. We got a lot of assets up there that are useful for this. So it's going to be very, very interesting as we sort this financing out. And then along the way, we'll have these designs, go copy and paste them in the U.S. and around the world. That's the game plan. So with that, I'll take questions.
Great. Thanks, Pat. That was a tremendous overview of the business. I do have a couple of questions for you. One that we get quite a bit, I guess the confusion when we talk to investors, is about the idea between production tax credits and carbon credits, which you've been monetizing lately. And I think there's a misunderstanding or a misunderstanding, but confusion about the difference between those two. So can you explain what the differences are and how they're monetized and what they mean to you?
Yeah. So the production tax credit in the Big Beautiful Bill, Section 45Z, is truly a production tax credit. Now, it uses carbon index or carbon score using a GREET model. Okay, those are all kind of details to calculate. I think that's what caused the confusion. But it actually is a production credit. So you produce ethanol and you have to get a 50 CI, you have to cross the threshold of a 50 CI score, meaning you got a 50% reduction, roughly. And anything below that, you get a tax credit. For every CI point of reduction, you get an increase of tax credit. So by producing stuff at a low carbon score, you can sell that tax credit to somebody. Okay. Now, the tax credits that we've sold, we've actually got insurance product, insurance wrap around it. They're that solid that we can get them underwritten. And so that's what we've been doing. And you'll see us continue to do that. They're worth about $10 million a quarter for us and growing. It'll be growing from that as well. As compared to selling the carbon on a ton basis, the carbon credits on a ton basis, completely unrelated thing, has nothing to do with the two. That's a completely different thing. So when we're selling tons of carbon to California, we bundle it up with the ethanol. Great. Off it would go to California. And by the way, I don't like that market because it's so low value. I like other markets better, or I like detaching the carbon. And in which case, we sell the detached carbon to a third party who wants it as what's called an inset in their value chain. Maybe they're buying gasoline or doing something. Maybe they have a fleet or whatever, and they got a need for carbon credits because they value them. Great. We've got we have the gold standard carbon credits to sell to them, and we can get paid more money. That's how we think about things. Two unrelated things.
My next question relates to a recent announcement. You had an 8-K that had some very interesting commentary about ATJ 30 and extending the DOE loan. What does that mean? Does that mean you're shifting to the ATJ 30? And maybe some more color on that, because I think it's a very interesting and important event.
Yeah, that's how I'd read it, that 8-K. And we're not really allowed to talk about details of anything with the DOE, but I'll tell you what. That 8-K, it mentioned specifically ATJ 30. ATJ 30 is, think about what we have there. We've already got the ethanol plant, already got sequestration. It's a de-risk site. It's fully commercial and operational. Risk is lowered all the way around, less capital deploy. The target number that we have is $500 million bucks. And this is before financing. Financing can add cost depending on how we do it. But it's a lot cheaper project and a lot more effective. I think that the DOE recognize these sorts of things, and they're gamers to try to figure it out with us. So I can't promise what will happen with it, but I sure like the open-mindedness. And remember, from the buttons we push, right, that really are true. Use more corn. We use up more ethanol. Remember, ethanol, people aren't not projecting ethanol markets to grow organically or anything. So in fact, it's likely to decline over time as engine efficiencies come up or EVs take over, or maybe it'll hold flat. But, well, great. We can use more ethanol. We can use more corn. We can help energy security. We're cost competitive when the plants are paid off. Fundamentally important point. Cost competitive. Hydrocarbons. Cost competitive with petrol. That's a big deal. Plus, by capturing CO2, we're developing infrastructure for enhanced oil recovery, which is going to be important. So we check a lot of boxes here, and I think that's why there's interest.
Next question is one of the things over the years, I've covered the renewable fuel space for a very long time, and this idea of science projects versus commercial projects has always been around. And the industry's evolved a lot over the past few years, but you're talking about commercialization at this point versus science projects. And I think it's important investors understand what that means and affecting the overall industry, but particularly Gevo, as you reach commercial scale, which is what we've all been looking for several years, but it seems like it's here.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So we hear all the hype about, ooh, SAF. You know what? I think SAF's a BS concept, actually. It's jet fuel that's in demand. It needs to be cost-competitive jet fuel. Otherwise, airlines can't afford to buy it. A simple reality of life. SAF, ooh, let's abate carbon. I agree with that. And if people want to have carbon abatement and buy carbon abatement, great. I love those people. Let's go. Let's get their money. So here's reality. Gevo started working on alcohols into jet fuel, diesel fuel, gasoline, and chemicals back in 2007. We were the first to build demo plants. We've been operating demo plants since 2012. We were the first to fly alcohol to jet around the world. We were the first to do the technologies. We're the first to have the patents on these kinds of things. We did that years ago. I've been at this almost 20 years. Finally, we're at a place where we can commercialize stuff. The last 5 and 6 years, it's all about commercialization. The technologies that we're using, as I mentioned, are already scaled up at full scale, ginormous scale, in the petrochemical industry. When people make stuff out of crackers and they have these olefins, they turn them into jet fuel already. Already been done. That's why we partner with Axens. They have leading market share of these technologies. In fact, they're the only company who has all the three key unit operations in one house. That's why we work with them on this. We didn't want to duplicate what they do. And here's something fascinating. We have a technology that they think beats theirs. It's not ready for prime time yet, so we don't spend much time talking about it. That'll be down in the future. Cool, we can cut out another 30% of cost. Awesome. But you know what? We got stuff that works at commercial scale. So our effort has gone into how do you make and design a plant that absolutely is going to run. How do you handle the logistics and scale? This is not for the amateur hour. You got to have people who've been there and done it before. How do you handle the 90 truckloads a day of corn? How do you handle all the solids? How do you handle the integration of the technologies? Our CI score is lower than what people would expect for this jet fuel because, we developed how to integrate heat and do it well. We filed a bunch of patents on it. So other people don't have that. Well, that gives us a lower carbon score. Great. If you want to abate carbon, that's worth something. So we're all about commercial reality deploying things. That's our focus. And what's fascinating about us, I think, at this time in our lives is now with Gevo North Dakota, we have the ability to generate EBITDA, and that alleviates any concern of, gosh, these guys are going to have to do dilutive fundraising anytime soon. Sorry, don't have to. Don't have to. We don't have to because I have EBITDA coming in, and we can optimize that further. And guess what? I have all the optionality. I can deploy the jet fuel plant in our time when it makes sense and we have the right deals in place. It isn't a do or die. It's definitely our growth platform, and definitely we want to do it because we think that's pretty cool because it's a target-rich environment. So that's how we think about it. And we're going to optimize it and put as much as that. Remember, it's $150 million EBITDA increase for that ATJ plant, that 30-million-gallon ATJ plant. Great. I want all $150 million in Gevo pocket. That's what I want. Will I have to grudgingly give up some to someone else? Maybe, if they're bringing capital for a platform play. Maybe. But guess what? We're not forced into anything. We're in a great financial situation.
Well, great. Thanks for the overview, Pat. We're running up against time, so we're going to end it here. Again, a great overview and presentation. You can find more information on Gevo and our research, as I mentioned before, at watertowerresearch.com. We have a bunch of research and events that you can check out there to learn more about the company. But thank you for your presentation today, Pat, and great overview.